Hi, everybody. This is a daily show that's somewhat different. So glad you're there. We hold no punches, so look for it. Truth bomb number one. Donald Trump says he's going to stop de-dollarization. Can he do that? I'm going to show you what he said. Truth bomb number two. The most self-serving and dishonest correspondence dinner you will ever see. It just took place in Washington, D.C. Truth bomb number three. More violence, more arrests, as pro-Israeli forces in the United States are told to crack down on those protesters at more than 200 colleges and universities. And we have the pictures to prove it. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Direct Impact. So the Global South community, led by Brazil and India, with Russia and China not too far behind, are yearning for a more fair global currency. You know that, right? But Donald Trump has just come out recently and said that if he becomes president, he will punish those who even think about substituting the dollar for another currency. You know, ironically, the push toward de-dollarization came about because of the sanctions and other penalties that were put on Russia in 2022, after the West unplugged Russia from the global financial system entirely and seized its assets. Developing economies saw that, and then they asked themselves, whoa, 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 what if they come after us? What if they do that to us? Places like Brazil and India and Iran and others started asking themselves, and that is why in January of 2023, BRICS, the Global South group that includes Brazil and Russia and India and China and South Africa and now many more, announced that it wants to create its own currency to bypass the U.S. dollar amid Washington's dangerous sanctions craze. Former President Trump says, "I will not let you do that." Here's his quote. "I hate when countries go off the dollar. I would not allow countries to go off the dollar because when we lose that standard, that will be like losing the Revolutionary War." Revolutionary War? Anyway, that will be a hit to our country. So says former President Donald Trump. Okay, now, here. You know, I can't help but think when I hear that, yes, it would be a hit to a country, which sounds exactly like what Washington, our country, our politicians do when they freeze the assets of other countries, when they steal the gold reserves in other countries, when they sanction the companies of other countries, and when they threaten other countries from doing business with whatever country we don't like at the time. Joining us now to discuss this is Ted Rall. He's a syndicated columnist and an author and an award-winning cartoonist. Also, Angie Wong. She's a co-host of The Final Countdown on Radio Sputnik. Thanks so much, guys, for joining us. I guess we start there. You know, it's interesting, Ted, I'll start with you, that the former president will come out and say that this is what I'm going to do because it's not fair that they would be considering taking out de-dollarization. As I recall, he was responsible for as many sanctions on countries as any other president we've had recently, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. One of the interesting aspects of Donald Trump as a political personality is that he's very, very adept at identifying problems in a way that many other American politicians are not. The problem is his proposed solutions. And, and this is one classic example of that. He's totally right that this would be, as you said in the intro here, it would be a major problem for the United States.
Yeah.
De-dollarization would present some major economic and political challenges. Now, that said, the answer to that is not to come down like a ton of bricks, no pun intended, on the BRICS countries. The idea is to reassure the world, don't worry, we're going to unwind these sanctions. We're going to make sure that when you invest in U.S. dollars as a reserve currency, or you have your assets tied up in dollar-denominated securities, whether they be in Europe or the U.S. or somewhere else, that no one's going to touch them. Your capital will be safe. that your U.S. dollars will be fine no matter where they are, even if we don't like your politics or we don't like the war that you happen to be involved in. If he does that, he might be able to reverse this trend. But this is the opposite of that.
Angie, I got one for you. This weekend, celebrities, multimillionaires, politicians, and members of the corporate media in America all came together to get drunk and to tell each other how wonderful they all are. This is called the National Correspondents' Dinner. I'm sure you've either attended or heard of this. It's an event which in the past at least allowed for some dosages of honesty. But this year, it was horribly disgusting. It was a sham of an event where some dude from Saturday Night Live with a very attractive face, Saturday Night Live, for those of you watching us overseas, is an NBC comedy show on Saturday nights. So this guy goes up on stage and he tells everybody what a horrible person Donald Trump is and what an incredibly great human being, like Mother Teresa-ish kind of person Joe Biden is.
And when you look at the levels of freedom throughout history and even around the world today, this is the exception. This freedom is incredibly rare, and the journalists in this room help protect that freedom, and we cannot ever take that for granted. So, Mr. President, I thank you for your decency on behalf of my grandfather, and I thank all of you, almost all of you, for your decency as well. I am very honored and grateful that you invited me here tonight. Thank you and good night.
Pardon me for saying this, but as I watch that, I want to vomit in my mouth. I'm sorry, but the most decent person ever, and those people who are there are also incredibly, incredibly decent. Are they really, Angie?
Oh, my goodness. Everyone in that room is part of the Biden state media. They're only being invited because they're kind to Biden and bad to Trump. Traditionally, the White House Correspondents' Dinner is a roast. You're usually roasting the president. You have several people going up on stage to take, you know, a silly punch on, you know, the man in charge, our commander in chief. But this time, no. Let's just blow a lot of air. Like, it's just the whole thing is bad. Even the fashion was bad. The hair was bad. The speeches were like, even today, other networks are not republishing what's being said because it was so awful. It was part of a script. But understand, everyone in that room is so scared to say anything bad about Biden because they will be disinvited from the White House from this point forward.
Ted, how decent is it to continue a war in Ukraine where the poor Ukrainians have run out of soldiers and you're doing everything possible to annihilate the population of a country? How decent do you have to be to see Israel massacre some 15,000 children, apparently kill some 30 to maybe 40, maybe 50, who knows, really, because nobody's really counting, but we have some official numbers, Palestinians in Gaza. How decent do you have to be to make sure you're the person responsible for making sure that happened? Just a question, Ted.
Look, I wish I knew how decent you'd have to be to send over $100 billion in U.S. taxpayer money over to fight these very conflicts that you just mentioned. At the same time that here in New York City, right outside my front door, there are people literally starving to death, American citizens sleeping outside on the streets who are getting no help whatsoever from their government, presumably that they paid taxes into for many years before they hit the skids and fell on some bad luck. Now, I mean, the meme that Joe Biden is a decent person, you know, it persists, but it is not, there's not much there. I always think about how, you know, this is a guy who repeatedly lied about how his own wife died. Right? Like he kept claiming that she was killed by a drunk driver. The guy wasn't drunk at all. It was just a lie, and he knew it, and he kept telling the story. That's not decent.
The whole thing makes me angry. I was invited once, as you know. I worked at CNN, and I worked at NBC, and I worked at Fox and all these places, and I was part of that culture. I bought into that culture, but I remember I was invited to go to the Correspondents' Dinner once, and I refused. I always felt that if you're a journalist, you shouldn't go get drunk with the people that you are supposed to have a rivalrous relationship with. My job is to check you, to ask you hard questions, not to be your buddy, and to see all these people there together, all friendly and telling jokes and patting each other on the backs. The whole thing is wrong. It's not just wrong now. It was ridiculously wrong this year. This is the worst I've ever seen. But it's been wrong for a long time, Angie.
Oh, yeah, but they have to put up this play. This whole Hollywood production, they have to keep it going. It's part of the script. You got to understand, this is the club, as you know. And thank you very much, Rick, for not being part of that establishment class, for doing eyewitness reporting and old-fashioned journalism. Not to call you old, I do the same. But we are here to be completely unbiased. I know that's not necessarily job security these days in the newsroom.
You know, speaking of that, I'm glad you just took us to where we want to go, because this is the other part of the correspondence dinner that once again made me want to throw up in my mouth when it was President Biden's turn to speak. This guy, our president, praised the journalists in the room, most of which make hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not tens of millions of dollars in some cases, right? Reading a teleprompter in some air-conditioned office building, but this is how he describes them.
Rushing into danger for others is my definition of patriotism and heroism. And so is what all of you do when you report truth over lies. That's why I want to close the night with my genuine thanks to the Free Press. There are some who call you the enemy of the people. That's wrong and it's dangerous. You literally risk your lives doing your job. You do.
The Free Press? You risk your lives? Most of the people in that room have never covered a story. Most of the people in that room have big offices in New York City or other big places or big cities in the United States. Most of those people read teleprompters for a living. And when they do get out, trust me, I've been there. I was sent to some of these places with the likes of Anderson Cooper. They travel with a makeup team. They find them a hotel room. They have an entourage of people taking care of every one of their needs. They fly in special dinners for them. These aren't correspondents in the old-fashioned way that we used to see, covering wars in Vietnam and Korea, etc. That was such a bunch of bullcocky from the president, telling these people how brave and how courageous they all are and that they're the so-called free press. Pardon me, I was supposed to ask a question here. I didn't. Ted, to you.
Rick, look, I've seen a few shots fired in anger when I covered the war in 2001 in Afghanistan, the 1999 Kargil conflict. I've been to Afghanistan a few times. And you're absolutely right, Rick. What you're saying is 100% right. The independent journalists who travel hard, many of them, for example, right now, Al Jazeera reporters who are in Gaza.
Or dead. They've been killed.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's real reporting. You know, I've seen major network guys literally, like you said, had like pallets of beer shipped to them at their special posh place, supposedly in the war zone. I mean, it's a joke.
Yeah, yeah. Angie, did you want to add something to that?
Yeah, I mean, of course, real journalists run to the epicenter of conflict, and we cover it. I don't know if anyone in that room has done that. Joe Biden on that night could not even, like, spoon himself, like, lettuce into his mouth. So I don't know what he's talking about. He himself is reading off a teleprompter that evening. I don't think those are actually his words coming out.
Yeah, well, that's obviously true with almost everything Joe Biden does. But to be respectful, he's not, you know, a young man. So, and to also be fair, What? Yes, I agree. It was a little worse this year than it has been in previous years because they're protecting him so much and they don't want anything to get in the way of his being reelected, I guess. But this thing that they do with this correspondence dinner was a joke during Trump, a joke during Obama, a joke during Bush, a joke during every single president, because that consortium of buddy-buddy between the press and the media and the politicians who all go there to get drunk together, that's wrong. And that's not democracy. despite what this dude from Saturday Night Live may be saying. Okay, sorry. What are we going to next? When we come back, have you guys seen what's going on all over the country? It's crazy. Now it's 200 universities. Emory University in Atlanta, Northeastern University now outside of Boston, UCLA. It's nutty what's going on in these places, and we're going to show you more video. We're going to show you what's going on with these disturbances of people who apparently don't like Mr. Biden's policies. We'll take you to that. Stay right there.
When I first moved to Russia, one of the most amazing things I found was the Moscow Metro. In fact, the very first phrase that I ever learned in Russian was, careful, doors are closing. Next station, Arkhangelsk. So what makes this place so special? What secrets is it hiding? To find out, we're going deep under the city with Alexander Popov. He is a historian who studies the wonders of the Moscow Metro.
Welcome back. This is Direct Impact, and I'm Rick Sanchez. I'm going to show you some incredible video of Joe Manchin getting screamed at by voters in a little bit. But before we go to that, I want to show you something else. This weekend, this thing is continuing to grow. It's not stopping. Tens of thousands of university students all over the country, most of whom who don't think Joe Biden is all that decent and who oppose the president's very pro-war policies, took to the streets. There were new demonstrations. Emory University in Atlanta, who knew? Northeastern University, just outside of Boston. That's a new place where this weekend more demonstrations suddenly broke out. University of California in Los Angeles with mass arrests, fights, violent clashes with police. This thing is not stopping. Here's a sampling. This is really amazing that, I'm old enough to remember the late 1960s. I was a young man, of course, but I remember the movement back then that was very anti-establishment. And it seems to be, an act of defiance, holding the middle finger to your government and saying, what you guys are doing is crazy, and it doesn't represent us. And stop with these wars. And stop killing people and stop sending our money overseas. I mean, obviously, in this case, they're focusing on Gaza, but there really is a sense of rebellion that I'm seeing amongst young people in the United States. Like, I haven't seen it, Angie, in a long time.
Yeah, what's wonderful about those video clips is the police doing their job again. It's nice to see the police being police again. You know, as a parent, I will tell you, I did not send my kid to a $70,000 a year tuition to be a little mini protester. I get it. You want to do that? That's fine. But honestly, I want to go to your graduation next week. I want you to finish up your finals this week. That's what I paid for. This this is not good. I don't like that I just paid tuition for my kid to be an agent for George Soros or whoever's funding this.
So you think that the young people in America who are protesting the wars are all just a bunch of communists and Marxists and they should be stopped? Well, is that what you're saying? I'm trying to understand.
You know, I spent a lot of time at Columbia and NYU in the past week. I've been sitting there and been watching the protesters. I've been talking to them. They're looking for something fun to do as the weather in New York warms up. It's communal. People are hanging out. They're hooking up. They're drinking beers. They're having a good time. That's all fun and well. But here's the thing. They don't necessarily know what they're protesting. And there's plenty of reporting being done by a lot of these protesters. They heard about something called October 7th. But that's as far as it goes. They don't actually know what they're protesting. They're just doing it because it's fashionable.
Wouldn't you think that they know that there are at least 30,000 people who've been massacred in Gaza and some 15,000 of them are children who really had no political position, and that Israel has lied at every turn about everything they have done, including killing aid workers in cold blood? Do you think maybe they might have an argument when it comes to that?
I think that they have heard things and that they've been talking to their friends about it. But ultimately, I don't know if they go beyond that. I don't think it goes deeper than that. I don't think they understand the history of what's been going on in Gaza. I get that these are the images that they're seeing every single day in the news and amongst friends. But ultimately, I just don't get the sense that they really are in deep with this, that they really understand what's going on.
So it sounds like you're telling me that you think what Israel's doing is right, that you're on the side of Israel on this, and you think the Palestinians are all terrorists.
No, I'm not a fighter on this one. I'm just reporting the news on this one, along with Ted Rall. We talk about this every day on our show, The Final Countdown, and I will tell you that I don't have a position on this, and Ted knows that. I do have a bleeding heart for those who have died in Gaza. I think it was terrible what has happened. I think it's been a massacre, and I think they've completely demolished most of Gaza to the point where the Palestinians cannot return. Now, I get all that. I get the politics of it. But these kids are being used as pawn for someone's political agenda. I don't love it because these are young kids. They should be doing their finals right now, and they should be walking down the aisle for graduation next week. But a lot of them have been canceled.
How about it, Ted? These are just a bunch of, says Angie, these are a bunch of spoiled brats who should go home. And their cause is really not justified. You agree with that?
Hell no, right? As Auntie well knows. Look, like Auntie, I spent some time up at Columbia. I have an alumni card, so I'm allowed to go on campus. I talked to the protesters. The people I talked to were very sophisticated and knowledgeable. They understood the history of settler colonialism in former British Mandate Palestine. They understood the history of the 1967 and the 1973 wars. They understood how Gaza came to under the control of Hamas, which, contrary to right-wing talking points, was not an election. They stole power in a coup against Fatah. I found their knowledge to be extremely sophisticated. And look, for the record, even if they turned out to be a bunch of ignoramuses, but they're just fighting because they thought that it's bad to kill tens of thousands of innocent civilians. That would be fine with me, because killing tens of thousands of innocent civilians is always wrong. But that said, that's not the situation with these young people. These are very smart, well-informed, very impressive young men and women who are attending, in the case of Columbia, one of the best colleges in the United States.
Well, okay, moving on to another topic. If there is a spirit of rebellion right now in this country, it's not just targeting the corruption of endowments at universities, it's also targeting politicians. As we have said many times on this program, the vast majority of U.S. politicians, especially those in Congress, are on the take. They are paid off, legally, by the way, by corporations to do their bidding. And right there at the top of the list is a guy named Joe Manchin, known for taking millions from corporations to then oppose rights for workers, climate activists, democratic reformists. In this video, you will see some voters confronting him, and this is not pretty for the senator. Watch.
Joe Manchin sold our futures, and he's gotten rich doing it. You sick How dare you?
I'm not going to sit down.
You've received more funding than
any other senator.
You made millions out of your position. You drive a Maserati.
The pipeline goes right through West Virginia, which are your constituents.
These people came here to support this pipeline.
The pipeline they should support because it has energy going to
not your users, not your profits. The Mountain Valley Pipeline will eventually be one of the many pipelines on the continent against everybody.
We'll get back on track here, guys.
Our futures, not your profits.
What do you think? What do you think of this one, Angie? Do you think it's okay to confront a U.S. politician who obviously takes a lot of money from donors, corporations? And I don't think Manchin is that different from any of the rest, but he is at the top of the list. Is it okay to do that?
Yeah, it's always okay to do that because these guys go into office, you know, making $100,000 a year, and they walk out, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, you know, richer. And it just doesn't make any sense. So, of course, it's okay to target a public figure like Joe Manchin. Look, he should explain how he makes his money. Every one of them should. You know, I don't even know if they even do bills or run the country. They just pretty much day trade all day long.
You make $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 a year, but yet you're worth $30 million, $40 million. And they said, what
Nancy
does he drive?
Pelosi.
He drives, yeah, and McConnell. What is right. What did they say? He drives two Maseratis or something? It's ridiculous. But it is what it is, and we're out of time. But we'll get you back. This is a great discussion. I'm so glad that we had a chance to share this. And I think these are hot stories that all of us should be talking about. My thanks to Ted. My thanks to Angie. You guys have been delightful guests. Thank you once again. Before we go, I want to remind you of our mission, simple really, just to try and de-silo the world. We've got to stop living in little boxes. Truths don't live in boxes. Truths are everywhere. It's what we focus on. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Direct Impact.